After taking food and becoming completely satisfied, she returned to the king. Upon seeing her beautifully decorated, attractive face, the king welcomed her with all devotion. Therefore, a woman is generally accustomed to dress herself nicely with fine garments and decorative ornaments. She may even sometimes wear flowers in her hair. Women especially dress themselves up in the evening because the husband comes home in the evening after working hard all day. It is the duty of the wife to dress herself up very nicely so that when her husband returns home, he becomes attracted by her dress and cleanliness and thus becomes satisfied. In other words, the wife is the inspiration of all good intelligence. Upon seeing one's wife dressed nicely, one can think very soberly about family business. When a person is too anxious about family affairs, he cannot discharge his family duties nicely. A wife is therefore supposed to be an inspiration and should keep the husband's intelligence in good order so they can combinedly prosecute the affairs of family life without impediment. Saraja Mahisham Rajan Susnatam Vidyanam Krita Swastyayanam Vittam Abhyananda Bhagatam. The queen took her bath and dressed herself nicely with all auspicious garments and ornaments. After taking food and becoming completely satisfied, she returned to the king. Upon seeing her beautifully decorated, attractive face, the king welcomed her with all devotion. So we're getting a really solid dose of instruction and hopefully some realization and practical application from this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not a light section of Bhagavatam. It's sometimes heavy going, and sometimes it may go against the grain, as His Holiness Devamita Swami likes to say, may rattle the cage a little to hear this information, to get this apparently negative analysis of our situation, our current situation in the material world. And The Vedic scriptures are consistent with this message that we come to the material world for the purpose of exploitation, for the purpose of enjoying, for the purpose of forgetting Krishna. We don't come here to be, most of us don't come here to be, to engage in pure devotional service. And the message that we hear from the acharyas, the message that we hear from our present day spiritual masters that we heard last week so powerfully and eloquently spoken by His Holiness, His Grace, and Sankarshan Prabhu and Ramaswami and many, many devotees who are speaking from this section of Bhagavatam, is that the purpose of the human form of life is to engage in, is to aspire for pure devotional service. Pure bhakti, shuddha bhakti. Because that will solve all the problems, that will solve all the issues, that will solve all the distractions, all the confusion and bewilderment. We have the ultimate solution. Bhakti is the ultimate solution for the problem of our material existence. And we think, well, we don't want to be always hearing this kind of negativity. We don't want to always hear that we're here in the material world, and the material world is a place of suffering, threefold burning miseries, and adhyatmika, devotika, daivika. We don't want to hear this all the time. We want to hear some pleasantries. We want to hear how we can be peaceful and adapt, and we can adjust our situation so that we can live happy life. We want to be happy. We want to have a happy family, happy marriage, and happy children, happy society, happy, everyone happy. But unfortunately, the material world isn't designed like that. In Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita, at the beginning of each chapter he offers a prayer, Sanskrit verse. Every chapter opens up and then Jaya Jaya Shri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda, then back into Bengali. Actually, a lot of the Chaitanya Charitamrita is in Sanskrit language. Bengali classic, but it's a lot of it is Sanskrit. And he opens up the chapter with one of the chapters in Anti Lila. I think it's a chapter where Lord Chaitanya meets Raghunath Das, or it's the instruction of Prajumna Mishra. Ramananda Roy instructs Prajumna Mishra in the Anti Lila. And there he says, Vaigunya Kita Kalitaha, that Krishnadas Kaviraja Swami is an elderly 90-plus-year-old sadhu in Vrindavan writing about the Charita of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the glorious deeds and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he says that he's infected with the germs of material activities. Krishnadas Kaviraja Swami is saying he's infected with the germs of material activities. And he's bitten by the worms of envy. And therefore, he falls in an ocean of humility at the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he refers to Lord Chaitanya as the Vaidya. Chaitanya Vaidya Masraye. You know what a Vaidya is?
Doctor.
Doctor. Mahatma. Vaidya. So Vaidya, Chaitanya Vaidya Masraye. He takes shelter of the doctor. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a doctor, physician. Because he can cure the disease of material affliction. I mean, the disease of material infection. It's called Bhava Roga. This Bhava Roga, in the beginning of the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, it says that the cure for this Bhava Roga, for this material disease, for this disease of lust, of anger, of envy, of maliciousness, is the cure for this disease is to hear Bhagavatam. Uttama Shloka Gunanavade. Those who hear this message of Srimad Bhagavatam, and particularly the pastimes of Krishna, that's why it's introduced in the 10th canto, the beginning of the 10th canto. If you hear this, Babosha Sarata Manobhidama, the Kabuta Nashrata Gunanavara, when you hear the descriptions and the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we begin to become free from that attraction, the overwhelming attraction for the material energy, for the sense gratification. And that's the underlying message here in this very detailed, comprehensive, cohesive section of Bhagavatam that pulls it all together, that says, don't try to enjoy the material world. It doesn't work. It has an inbuilt obsolescence. Means that this can't work. You can't get a lifetime guarantee from Bhagavatam. The other week we went to the chef's hat in South Melbourne and we bought a pot, a pan for cooking, and we got a lifetime guarantee. Mm-hmm. Lifetime guarantee for a pot. But you can't get a lifetime guarantee for anything in the material world. Lifetime guarantee doesn't happen. When you try to enjoy the material energy, there was an element of that enjoyment that will turn out to be a suffering, either for yourself or for somebody else, or a long-term misery, something. And therefore the acharyas encourage us to take the bhakti, because bhakti will give us happiness. Susukam kaptamapya. It will be enjoyably performed and it will give happiness. Eventually. It may not give straight away, but it will give us happiness because we become relieved from suffering in this material world. In the purport to the... Actually, I prepared a class for 26, so I was taught to talk on 26. And in 26, Srila Prabhupada, from the previous chapter, Srila Prabhupada, he quotes the verse, Yam maiti navi griha medhi sukham tucham, twice. And so I started to focus on that verse a little bit. It's a famous Brahmacharya verse, Prahlad Maharaj's instructions. And Prahlad Maharaj instructs us, conditioned souls, readers of the Srimad Bhagavatam, aspiring devotees, instructs us in many positive ways to take to the process of Shravanam Kirtan, the process of bhakti, because that will give relief, that will give happiness. And in this verse he says, he gives a string of verses, maybe 40 verses, 40 instructions from Prahlad Maharaj, a long section in Bhagavatam, 7th canto. And in this verse, in the 90 verse, he says that materialists are bewildered by this attraction for the opposite sex. Engaging. They engage in this, it's like relieving the itch. The two hands rub together, an itch, and it makes it worse. Somebody suffers from eczema or some skin disease, or you have a boil, and you scratch and scratch and scratch, and until this blood comes. So you feel like it's helping, it's relieving the itch. But all of a sudden, you've got a bigger problem of infection, of sores, and it just continues to get worse and worse from the itching. And that's how Prahlad Maharaj describes our attraction for sense gratification. That we want it, we want it, we want it. We'll do anything to get it. And the more we aspire for it, the more we go for it, the more suffering we experience. One time in the school in Auckland, we had a young boy, his five-year-old boy, and he was jumping up and down on the trampoline. And he was enjoying. Right? He was enjoying like anything on a trampoline. You can imagine how much fun you can have on a trampoline. So he actually twisted his ankle and broke his ankle. And his ankle puffed up like anything, quickly. That part of the body is quite delicate. So it puffed up. And when the body does that, it says, you know, stop, relax, don't move. And it's a sign, it's a warning sign in the body, signal. But he didn't, he was enjoying too much, he wanted to keep bouncing. So he just kept bouncing up on the trampoline until he just couldn't bend. dance anymore, screaming. But he was trying to enjoy it. We stopped him. Trying to enjoy the material world, trying to enjoy the trampoline of this material world, up and down, enjoying it. And we can't. We can't always enjoy the material world. It's just one of those things. In Panchatantra, you know Panchatantra stories? In the Panchatantra, there's a story of a snake. And this snake, he made friends with a family of frogs. Snake, he went to the frogs, and he said to the frogs, "Look, you know, if you jump on my back, I'll take you for a ride. All around the river, through the log, over the rocks, down the waterfall, everything. You just jump on my back, all the frogs." He spoke to the king of the frogs. And the frogs saying, "No, come on, snakes, you're going to eat us. You'll eat us all, no problem. We're your food." And he said, "No, just, you give me one frog. You've got hundreds of frogs here. One frog per ride. That's the payment." So they all agreed. They said, "So many frogs. We'll just jump on and we'll have fun." So they jumped on the back of the snake. The snake told him he got cursed and he's hungry and he can't eat anything. He can't move very nicely. Brahmana cursed him for biting a Brahmana while he's chanting his Gayatri in the river. So he told the story. And the frogs agreed and they all jumped on. And they had a good time. He took the frogs everywhere, all around the river, and through this little nice environments, ecosystems that were created by nature, you know, through the fallen trees and everything like that, across the rapids. And at the end of the day, he would eat which frog was on the back of the tail, he would eat that frog, turn around and eat the frog. That was his payment. The next day, all the frogs jumped on again. He said, "Enjoying so much, free ride." And then finally, there's no frogs left. The snake ate all the frogs. And we're like those frogs in the material world. We jump on the material world and we try to enjoy, and it won't happen to us. The snake's not going to eat. There's hundreds of frogs, millions of us. We're not going to get devoured by the material energy. While we're here, we should enjoy it. We should renew our Netflix. We should get a faster computer. We should get a better facility, a nicer car, a better AC. At least we should service our AC. So we should try to enjoy it. We should try to make adjustments. But we'll be like the frogs eventually. This is a chapter, Chandavega, the chapter for the frogs that are going to be devoured. So Prabhupada actually didn't that purport to Yan Mai Tanabu Gini Vedis, becoming a Pitchan. Prabhupada says, unfortunately, however, because of a lack of education and culture, the people in this material world are victimized by the happiness of sense gratification. It's a very powerful purport. It's one of those purports, you know, you get trained to read a purport in Bhagavatam and you try to extract the main point of the purport. What is the essence of the purport? When you go to VHE or you go to some training or Keshava Guru's teaching, what is it? What is the purport? What is the point of this purport? That's one of those purports where it's hard to find what's the main point, because there's every sentence practically in that purport is, well, they're all in the same main point, but they're all powerful statements on their own, independently powerful statements on their own, that succinctly capture the essence of Prahlada Maharaj's teachings. Unfortunately, we're victimized. I mean, the language that Prabhupada uses is very, very concise. And for somebody who apparently has English as a second language, it's a very, very incredible choice of words that he uses. You can say he's like a wordsmith. But Krishna gives him this amazing inspiration that we become victimized by this attraction due to a lack of culture and education. We become victimized to the false happiness in the material world. It's not real, it's false. And in the same purport, Prabhupada says, Prahladmaraj is recommending. And the Vedas are like this. The Vedas, there's no tragedy in Vedic literature. There's a lot of tragic events, but it's no Shakespearean tragedy where it just ends in a disaster, or, you know, these fables from China. There's tragedies. Every story practically is a tragedy. In the Vedic literature, Mahabharata, Ramayana, in epic literature, in Purana, in all the Vedas, they don't have a concept of a Shakespearean tragedy. Because there's always a solution. It's solution direct. So we hear problems plenty often. Actually, ideas and unlimited problems of people, of devotees, of examples of all the things you can do wrong in the material world. We hear that, but the solution is always different. There's always a solution. There's always a transformation. And that makes the narrative very enticing of Bhagavatam. And the sub-narrative and the interwoven concepts and ideas and culture that we hear from the Bhagavatam, it makes it a page-turner. Because we're wondering, well, how do we get out of this? How do we solve this problem? How did such a great personality have such a problem? We often think. Sometimes we think. That's bewildering. How did Lord Ramayana have a problem? How did Lord have a problem? Chase after Malini Murthy, or do this or do that. How can that happen? And then hear the Bhagavatam. And then we hear their responses and the way that those great devotees and kings and rishis, how they respond and what they're doing. And therefore we just imbibe. It's without even knowing, we're imbibing a set of solutions ourselves, internalizing responses to situations by associating with the Bhagavatam, by associating with the characters in the Bhagavatam. And so Prahladmaraj recommends, Prabhupada says in his purport, don't be misled. Don't be misled by civilization of sense gratification. Civilization of sense gratification, which is the ultimate of that sense gratification, is considered to be sex life. And he says that the hippies, in one purport in the second canto, he says the hippies gave up everything. They gave up their parents' culture, they gave up their parents' facilities, their wealth, their position. They gave up everything except the sex life. So they couldn't give that up. The last thing they could give up. And he says, actually, the only way to give it up is to engage in practical devotional service. Theoretical knowledge won't be good enough, he says. You can say that the Bhagavatam, the scripture, is theoretical knowledge, but he says that the deity worship and engaging in Panchanga Bhakti is practical. It's a practical knowledge that purifies the heart of the desire. That's the kutta, the bija, and the kutta. The inclination, the proclivity, the desire to do sin, to commit sin. That is destroyed by bhakti, by pure devotional service. And that's why we hear that our acharyas say that the goal of life is pure bhakti. Because only pure bhakti will remove that desire for committing sin. Kutta bija. When we perform pure devotional service. And that's it's a great blessing that we have been provided this opportunity. You know, I was thinking, meditating about the word kripa on the way here to the temple this morning. And it's often used in Bhagavatam. And when Prabhupada gives his commentary on the Bhaja Horemana Bhaja, Bhaja Vindadas, he refers to Durjana as outsider. Durjana, Chafala Sukada. The Durjana is somebody who's outside of bhakti. So he's not a friend. He's not a Surjana. He's a Durjana. He's a far distance. We keep them at a distance, the Durjana. Sangatyago. We keep them at a distance so that we don't become influenced. Because association is everything. When we have a strong association, then we become attracted to and we develop an inclination toward bhakti, devotional service. There's a in the Ramayana, there's a story of Sita, and she instructs Ram. This is the woman instructing the husband. And Ram is in the forest and he has a bow and he has his arrow. He doesn't leave his bow and arrow in Ayodhya. He takes it in Dandakaranya. And he starts to shoot animals in the forest, and Sita doesn't like it. Because, alright, he can protect the sages and the sadhus, but he just starts shooting, you can say, whimsically, and killing animals in the forest. And so, like our Puranjana is in the forest, killing, mercilessly killing all these animals. So Ram was killing these animals, and she said, I don't like that you kill these animals. She said, three things should be avoided. One of them is that a man should never try to enjoy it with another's wife, one thing. And Ram will never do that. He's a ekapapanibrata. He will never think of that. He won't even look like that. And that we should not be engaged in taking somebody else's property. And Ram's not interested. He's a supreme personal God. And that one should not mercilessly kill other living entities. And so she said, Ram will never take someone else's property, encroach on another's property, and you'll never look at another man's wife. But his problem is that he's killing these innocent living entities that are not causing harm. So she told a story. She didn't just say, don't kill the animal. She told the story of Lord Indra. It's a very instructive story about association. She said, there was one great sage in the forest in a hermitage, and he was performing austerity, tapasya. He became very powerful. And Lord Indra was thinking, this sage is becoming too powerful. And Indra doesn't like that, because he's thinking, if he keeps going, he's going to become Indra. He'll take the position. He'll be the boss. So he's going to go down there and devise a way to distract him. Sometimes he'll send an apsara or something. So this time, Lord Indra thought, he'll go down there and ask this sage to look after his weapon. So he went down there with this very amazing sword, powerful sword of Lord Indra, and his vajra. And he said, you mind this. Didn't go there as Lord Indra, but he said, you mind this. Kshatriya, powerful kshatriya. I have to go and do some business. So the sage said, you leave it here and nobody will touch this sword. It's protected. No one will ever take it from the sage. And the kshatriya, he believes in the sadhu, the rishi. So the rishi, after some time, he took wherever he went, he took the sword with him, because somebody might come to his ashram and steal it. So he'd take a bath, go to the bathroom and take the sword. And he would do his puja, and the sword will be next to him when he does his puja. When he does his yajna, everything that he did in the ashram, he did with the sword. When he went out of the ashram, he took the sword, and he brought it back. And he left the sword next to him the whole time. And after some time, he started to think, he was always thinking of this sword next to him. Because when is this kshatriya going to come back? When is this king going to come back and reclaim the sword? But then he kept thinking that the sword, what can the sword do, and what is the use of the sword, and why have I got a sword anyway, I'm in an ashram. And then he started to play with the sword. Then he became bewildered by the sword. And he became very aggressive. He started to kill innocent animals. And then he tried the sword on ferocious animals. Then he started killing innocent animals. Then he started killing human beings. He's a rishi, sadhu. He started killing human beings. And then he killed brahmanas. They can't use ashram with the sword. And so Sita said, this rishi, he was very advanced in knowledge and in practice. But because of the association of the sword, he went to a dark place. When he left his body, it said he went to a very dark place where people go, murderers and people who do all bad things. He went there, and he was almost a perfected human being. and his wife, Sydney. He had many cities. But because of that association, Lord Indra was great. Lord Indra was had the good idea just to give him a sword. Doesn't have to say anything. And he fell down and he didn't take Indra's seat. So by association we become aggressive. By association we become envious. By association with the wrong people, we become lusty to enjoy the material world. And therefore, the happy ending is that we have a process. The solution that is in Bhagavatam, the solution that's given to us by the acharyas, is through education and culture. In the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says in the fourth chapter, that's the in the beginning of the fourth chapter, Imam Divasvate Yogam verse in the purport, he says that it's the duty or the responsibility of all the leaders of society, not just human society, but of all planets in the universe, the leaders of the planets of the universe, to understand this knowledge and to give it to the citizens, to relieve them, to give them Krishna consciousness, to relieve them from the suffering of material consciousness, to elevate them. The duty of the kshatriya is to save, protect one from harm. And the greatest protection that we can give to the conditioned soul is to protect them from sense gratification. Prabhupada said once that the greatest form of violence that we can commit to children is to expose them to sense gratification at an early age when they don't have any need for sense gratification. It's the greatest form of violence. And so, the definition of ahimsa, and if you can share this definition with people who come to the temple on Sunday feast, now we're getting many Western people coming to the Sunday program, especially after the kirtan, you know, maybe 20 or 30 of them in the temple, Western people, sitting here listening to the kirtan. If you can share some of this knowledge with them, some gems of this Prabhupada's commentary in Bhagavatam, they'll become very, like, inspired and amazed. It's not just like a party trick that you're going to share them with some knowledge like this, but they're searching for that. Why did they come here? They're searching for something. They sit through a class, they go to a feast, they come for the 7 o'clock arati, they sit for the kirtan. There's a reason why they're here. We should not just ignore them. Krishna brought them here, and so we can present to them something from that we've heard, something that inspired us. Not something theoretical or something that we haven't got any realization about, or we haven't, you know, something that we've just read that sounds cool. Something that that really touched us, that will touch someone else. That's how we do, that's the preaching. Something that impressed me will impress someone else if I present that in an authentic way. But if I'm really real about it, then people think, well, this guy is, you know. We don't have to do a lot of adjustment. You know. Sometimes devotees think that we have to water down the process, water down the philosophy of Krishna consciousness so much that the people that are coming think, well, what's the difference with you guys? We already get this at the chai bar, we already get this somewhere else. But there's something very special and essential that they can't get anywhere else, and that's what they're coming here for. And we're thinking, well, this is not the 60s, there's no hippies, there's plenty of hippies. There's more hippies now than ever. But they're just living in different situations. They might have a different dress, maybe they don't have all the beads, and they might not have all the long hair, but they're hippies. Plenty of them. We were talking to one group of people that come to the Sunday feast. They have 35 people living in the house. They're living in an ashram of hippies, right? And they are so interested. Whatever you give to them, like, wow, that's really cool. That's so nice, man. Like, whatever. You just give it to them. And they're soaking it up. Because we have something that is genuine. Something that is coming from the parampara. One of my devotee friends, he studied all the alternative systems of yogis in India, coming from India. All the self-help stuff in the West. All of them, from Sadhguru to everybody. He studied them all. And he said, one of the things that's consistent with all of them Every one of the self-help gurus and the, you know, the popular gurus are coming from India, is that none of them have parampara. Not one of them has a parampara. They started it themselves, or they're just following someone else recently, but they don't have any consistent parampara to curse. So when you give knowledge that comes in parampara, a knowledge that comes from Lord Vishnu, through Lord Brahma, through Srila Vyasadeva, Madhava, when you give that knowledge, that has potency. You might not think you have potency. But we have, if we become transparent, then the knowledge that comes through us has potency. And so we shouldn't be shy. We shouldn't hold back. But we should give as much as we can to anybody, Gari Deka Parikara, whoever we see them, give them as much bhakti as we can, as much bhakti as we can hold, we can give that to them. And that will benefit us and benefit everybody else that comes in contact with us. And that's the education and culture that's lacking. When Prabhupada says because of a lack of education and culture, people are victimized by sense gratification in the material world, we have that education, we have that culture. Our culture is Panchanga Bhakti, devotional service, deity worship, Bhagavatam, chanting the whole name, association with the devotees. That is a culture. That's our culture. It's called the Gaudiya Vaishnava culture. And that is a culture that sustains us and nurtures us and nourishes us and has a capacity to nurture and nourish and sustain everybody in the universe. It's the ultimate. It's the in Bhagavatam it says that etavaneva lokesmin punsam dharma parasmitaha, that the ultimate religious principle for all living entities in human society is bhakti, devotional service. That's the ultimate religious principle, beginning with chanting the holy name of the Lord. Etavaneva lokesmin punsam dharma parasmitaha bhakti yoga bhagavati Tanama Grahamadini, beginning with the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. That's our culture. Bhakti creates a culture around it. Devotional service creates a culture of festivals, a culture of sharing, a culture of giving, a culture of receiving, a culture of supporting and encouraging, a culture. It's a different culture to the materialistic culture. And it's a culture, it's an eternal culture. And the education that we get is that we're a spirit soul. Beginning with we're a spirit soul. Not beginning with rasa lila. Mm-hmm. Beginning with I'm a spirit soul. You know, I spoke to my niece at the Christmas gathering, and she did a yoga course. She's a yoga instructor. And she had a lot of problems. She's a very talented girl, very qualified. She's a nurse and many things, but she had a lot of problems, like, you know, understanding what's her purpose in life. She wasn't getting any satisfaction from her nursing degree, she wasn't getting satisfaction from her social yoga, and she became a yogi, whatever. But she's got a yoga certificate to say she can teach yoga. And she told me that finally, after years of searching, she's got some sense of a reference point and a sense of identity. So yoga has given her a sense of identity. And that's the most, that's something that the conditioned souls, the world of conditioned souls, are lacking, a sense of identity. Because their sense of identity changes so rapidly with the fashion, with the season, with the moment. Their sense of who they are and their worth and their purpose in life is not fixed. And yoga has given her that. And therefore now she wants to inquire about, you know, Krishna consciousness, because she's at slightly elevating. Actually, her brother, my nephew, he asked me one day, about a year ago, he said to me, you know, we were just having some family conversation, he said to me, have you ever done any kirtan? My nephew, have you ever done kirtan? And I said, well, after 35 years of being in Hare Krishna, I think I've been to a kirtan. Yeah, I have done kirtan. And he said, yeah, we really like kirtans. We want to do some kirtan. So he started coming. He said, we do kirtan also. He goes to kirtan in Kolkata somewhere, I don't know what it does. But he does kirtan in common with some devotees, with some other group. But he came here, and he was just like, he said he never experienced kirtan like this in his life. And he was like over the moon. This kirtan in the temple, you know, it was Sunday kirtan. But Ananta Vasudev was doing here, and all the devotees, that it's really, he couldn't move. He was transfixed by the whole experience. And so he comes here. He's one of the Western guys who comes here on a Sunday for kirtan. And kirtan is a phenomenon, an international phenomenon all over the world. You hardly have to, you don't have to disguise Krishna consciousness much anymore. You can be as direct as you like, because kirtan is kirtan. And we get kirtan from Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They may say they get kirtan from wherever they like, or you know, they don't know who Krishna is, but we just do kirtan because it's from the heart, or they say whatever philosophy they've got. We don't care what their philosophy is. But kirtan comes from the Gaudiya tradition, that's our culture. We have a culture of kirtan. A culture, it's an enlightening culture. And that's how Mahaprabhu spread Krishna consciousness through kirtan and prasada. That's what we do here. That's our business. Family business is kirtan. Family business is prasada. And that, and through that, we develop a whole network of engagement and support and encouragement. Kirtan culture. And that helps us to become situated, that gives us that reference point, that gives us a sense of identity. I'm an eternal servant of Krishna, completely apart from the gross and subtle body. When the devotees do the puja in the morning, they do this, offer this sutta bhukti, they purify the senses, purify their body and their consciousness. And so they identify as a spiritual being. I'm not this material body. I'm not this Indian, this Australian, this Russian, this South American. I'm a spirit soul. That's the first thing that comes in front of the deities. When I sit in front of Gordon Tide, we don't sit there and say, oh, I'm an Australian. And I'm this and that, and these are my qualifications, and that's why I'm here, because I'm so great. I'm an eternal servant of Krishna, completely apart from this gross and subtle body. And by some unimaginable good fortune, I've been placed here at your lotus feet, serving. My spiritual master has enabled me to know that I'm an infinitesimal spiritual being. That's our identity. And that identity, we got that from day one in Krishna consciousness. And it remains fresh. It remains, it's ever potent. It doesn't become stale. Ayata yana kama. When Sadama Vipra, Santipani Muni, blessed Siddhanta Vipra and Krishna, he said, let the instructions that I gave you, let them be ever fresh. They never go stale. They'll never go off. No use by date. No best before. It's eternal. This one is eternal. This instruction that I gave you. Because you've got to please the Guru, please the spiritual master. So you get this, ayata yata yamani. It'll never go off. This instruction. Bless you. Let all your material desires be fulfilled, he said. Let your material desires, let them be fulfilled. And let these instructions be fresh. Chandamsa yakti yamani. And that's the blessings that we seek from the spiritual master, from Srila Prabhupada, from Bhagavatam. I'll just finish with this meditation and connect it to this section of Bhagavatam, how that the importance of hearing, the importance of culture, and the importance of education, and how that we become attracted to a spiritual, or spiritualize our lives, how to spiritualize our lives and transform from matter to spirit and stay there. We oftentimes we go through this transformation experience, but it doesn't sustain for so many reasons. And this little gem that we get from the beginning of that story of the Sudama Vipra in the 10th canto, right towards the end of the 10th canto, we hear this story, like chapter 80, or so there's 90 chapters right in the 10th canto. Right towards the end, we hear a Sudama Vipra. And it's a very enchanting chapter. It's a very beautiful chapter of instruction and deep meaning of what's happening here, of giving and receiving and connection and satisfying the spiritual master and so many things. And in there, at the beginning of it, at the beginning of each chapter in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, particularly in the beginning, many cantos, but at the beginning of the 10th canto chapters, Parikshit Maharaj, he asks Sukadeva Goswami a question that inspires Sukadeva Goswami, inspires him to speak and to continue to speak and directs the conversation. And in the beginning he says, at the beginning of this chapter, Sadhama Vipra, he says, who wouldn't, after hearing this description of Krishna Katha, through this Bhagavatam, who wouldn't? He says, Kova Srutva Sukhi Brahman, oh Brahman, for Brahman is Sukadeva Swami. Who wouldn't, after hearing Srutva Sukhi, this amazing Uttama Sloka Sakata, this eternal pastimes of the Uttama Sloka of Krishna, who wouldn't relish that and stay fixed in their bhakti? Only the one, a person who knows the essence of life, Vishesha Agya. Vishesha Agya means one who knows the essence of their existence. That person who knows the essence of life, and Vida Metta Vishesha Agya, Vishana Kama Margana, one who is completely disgusted with the Kama Margana, with the path of lust, with the path of sense gratification, that person, he will stay fixed in their bhakti, or she will stay fixed. They have to, because they're completely finished with their material existence, and they want to hear about Krishna. And by hearing about Krishna, it's from the Tam Swakata Krishna, Punya Shravana Kirtana, Ridyamti Stoya Vardarani, Vidyamti Suritsatana. The heart becomes completely cleansed by hearing about Krishna. And by seeing Krishna, we become cleansed. And that is our culture. And that's how we become destructive. Prabhupada said the only way to become free from the, what is it called in the Bhagavatam and in the Nectar of Instruction. It says the only way to become free from the rubbish cinema songs and something, the rubbish cinema songs and the sex songs of the radio, is to become attracted to the deity. The deity is our practical engagement. The deity is a practical application of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness that gives a higher taste. Bahayate nayanam naranam. If you don't use your eyes to see the deity of Krishna, then the eyes are like the plumes on the peacock feather. They look very attractive and beautiful, and they can do all sorts of eyebrow work on them and all sorts of things with their eyes. But if they don't use the eyes for seeing Krishna, they're useless. If you don't use the limbs to go to the temple, it's useless limbs. Nadu. It's like a tree trunk. Why do you have bile baturu krama vikrama? If you don't use the ears to hear about vikrama, the uttana shloka vikrama, if you don't use the ear to hear about Krishna, the ears are like the whole snake hole. It's useless to have those ears if you don't use them appropriately to become transfixed on Krishna. I said I was going to finish on that introduction from that Sudama Rupa story. But the sequel to that, and this is the finish, this is it. The sequel to that is actually Prabhupada's commentary in that Bahayate Nayanam, that verse. It's in the second canto about a change of heart. It's one of those explosive chapters in Bhagavatam where Prabhupada has to use everything in one chapter. So called change, pure devotional service, a change of heart. And if you read the Acharyas, it's the first time it's ever been called that chapter. If you read the previous Acharyas, the title is called the Devatas, the demigods, and some other thing. But Prabhupada's title is Pure Devotion Service, a Change of Heart. And if you read the chapter, you'll realize why Prabhupada, if you read it carefully, you'll realize why Prabhupada gave that title to that chapter, Pure Devotion Service, a Change of Heart. Because at the beginning of the chapter, it's talking about what we do. If you want to have longevity, then you worship the sun god, if you want to have strength, worship Shiva, if you want to have fame, worship this god, if you want to have organize how to do different yagyas to satisfy different demigods to get benefit in your world. First 10 verses of the chapter. And then it changes, then the transformation comes. That's where it says, you know, whatever your desire is, just worship Krishna. Doesn't matter if you've got material desire or no. Akama, Sarakama, or Moksha Kama, Dhali. That's that verse. That's the pivoting point in that chapter. It takes 10 or something. Changes. So my white desire is just worship Krishna. Tibrena Bhakti Yogina, Yajita Purusham Param. Focused attention, worship Krishna. And all your desires will be fulfilled. And you won't have to continue the cycle of repeated birth and death. And in the purport, Prabhupada says that if one sees the profusely decorated form of the Lord in a well-decorated and sanctified temple environment, then surely that will infuse the mundane mind with spiritual inspiration. What a powerful, beautiful, eloquent sentence Prabhupada has given me. It's just like that whole thing is just poetry. Prabhupada speaking is a revelation that he said, that is given to us, to share with us. That surely, if one sees a profusely decorated form of the Lord in a well decorated and sanctified temple, surely that will infuse the mundane mind with spiritual inspiration. And that's our culture. That's what sustains and nurtures and nourishes us. That's what keeps us away from the attraction of the cinema and away from the attraction of the sex songs on the radio and away from Netflix or whatever we've got, whatever other things are distracting us, YouTubing or whatever we're doing that's distracting us from our pure bhakti. Then we have this incredible opportunity, and therefore we're creepiness. This is my meditation way. We're creepiness if we don't use the body properly. A creepina holds something. We've got wealth. We've got all this money. We've got all this facility, and we're not utilizing that wealth. So we have this. We're creepiness if we don't use the body. If we don't use the eyes and ears, the tongue, the nose, our skin, our legs, working senses, the mind, intelligence, if we don't use that for its proper purpose, we're creepiness. And we lost that. Durajanas, outsiders. But we want to be insiders. We want to get in Krishna's group. Right? We don't want to be outsiders. Don't be a creepiner. Be a Uddharati. Have a broad-minded intelligence. A broad-minded approach. By transforming that matter to spirit. Okay, I hope I haven't disturbed you too much this morning with my lack of focus. But the disclaimer here is that I wasn't really prepared for that. I was told to speak on another verse, but of course Bhagavatam is very connected, and so one or two verses, this is not such a bad mess. Are there any questions or comments, reflections on anything that you've heard this morning? Very good.
I felt a very interesting sense of the problem. You're saying the wife is the inspiration of all the devotees. In other words, the wife is the source of all the inspiration of the husband's intelligence and good order. It's an amazing status. I wonder if you have any further comments on those statements.
I think one of the things that in this section of Bhagavatam that we learn is how Prabhupada has taken the situation of Puranjana and he's using that materialistic, lusty desire of a conditioned soul in the allegory that Narada Muni is presenting to Prachinda Daisha. His Prabhupada takes that instruction to say that, all right, the pure intelligence is Krishna consciousness, and that the wife represents that. She's an inspiration for that pure intelligence. And so when the wife and the husband join together in Krishna consciousness, they're not Puranjana and Puranjani.
Mm-hmm.
They're not. They're the wife and the husband support and encourage each other in their bhakti. And therefore, these purports are not about somebody who's on the bhakti mark, somebody who's engaging in devotional service, somebody who's hearing the chanting and who's taking the association of devotees. So the materialistic wife is inspiring the husband to further expand their materialistic engagement. But the wife of a devotee in the Grihastha ashram, as opposed to Grihamedi ashram, in the Grihastha ashram is inspiring the husband to expand also, to expand their capacity to engage in bhakti. And that is the difference. I think that's one of the central teachings that Prabhupada wants us to take away from this section of the Bhagavatam. That we don't want to think that, this is directly instruction for anyone who's in the Grihastha ashram. Because a Grihastha is somebody who's taking the shelter of the Chaitanya Vaidya Mahasaya, taking shelter of the opposition, Mahaprabhu. And because of that, the husband gets inspiration from the Krishna conscious wife. But if the wife is not Krishna conscious, of course, or if the husband's not Krishna conscious, then either one of them drags the other one down. And then there's conflict, and there's confusion, and then there's all sorts of distractions.
In all cases.
Sorry?
In all cases.
In all cases. Yes. Did you want to say?
There's some time there's a tendency to think of the same way that we can do. Probably also mentions we have a conversation where we want to pull this cow and trash it. So we've got to be careful that we don't mistreat the cow. In a spiritual culture, women is a very difficult role. I've heard Prabhupada also say this, we want to take the world by cultural conflict. Part of it, I think, has a tendency to be the world by actual culture. But how we think women should behave in a proper social environment. Because the world is so, so damn. There's no reference point. When we read Bhagavatam, we get some sort of glimpse of what spiritual culture really is and how loaded that can be. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada also mentions that in the Osiris that if everyone follows this plan, this planet becomes what the local planet. You read that in the book. It's unimaginable that those words of Prabhupada speaking are not empty statements. They are tangible realities. Things come to pass.
Yeah, it's true. And he said his temple is quite complex. So, yes.
I have a comment and a question. I was reading you mentioning about violence, non-violence. I was reading how Prabhupada says that devotee is non-violent, and then he describes what is non-violence. Non-violence is engaging the body in Krishna's service. Describes that as violence. So in other words, non-violence. In other words, violence means to not engage the body.
To not engage your body in devotional service, and to hinder somebody else's development or progress in spiritual life is actually violence. that's something we can share with others, because non-violence is it's topical, it's relevant. I mean, Krishna consciousness is so relevant to the debate of the day and anything practical that's going down, from veganism to global warming. You know it, Krishna consciousness is relevant. It's completely relevant, because it has a capacity to address the essence of every situation that's going on in the world, whether it be gender crisis or global warming or volcanoes in New Zealand or whatever it is. Krishna consciousness has an interpretation, an analysis, and a solution for anything that's going on in this world.
And then you were mentioning how people come to the temple on Sunday, for example, and we can share snippets from the books. So what were some examples?
Well, that's a good one. So people really love that definition. A different type of definition of ahimsa. Spiritual identity is a big one. I mean, we avoid speaking about religion because nobody likes religion, right? 95% of people in this world hate religion. You know, Catholics, and they've all left their religion because of so much corruption, so much problems, etc., etc. We know that they're issues. So we're not saying we've got the best religion, we're better than the Muslim people. We're better than the Catholics. We don't say that at all, but we talk about spirituality and automatically, 90% of the people in the world are interested in spirituality now, because there's so many problems, and they realize that materialism is not the solution. That's why I say they're still hippies, plenty of them, because hippies were people that rejected their parents' culture, their traditions and everything like that, to seek a higher purpose in life, to seek solutions. And now, these young people in universities, in yoga studios, in SWATs all over the world, wherever they are, these young people are rejecting their parents' culture, etc. And they're seeking solutions. And they're open. They might be tinged with Mayavadism, they might be influenced by impersonalism, they might have so much baggage that they come with, that gradually we can deal with. Krishna can deal with that. But as long as they become attracted to coming to the temple, we make friends with them, we don't Bible bash them out of the temple and try to make out that we're great and they're useless, our temples will become full with these people that are seeking, and not just full, but they'll encourage other people. Like one of the girls told us that 2 weeks ago she came to the temple first time. Last week she came, she said she lives in a house with 35 people. Last week she came, first time she came with 3 people, second time she came with 7 people. And she said, let's see what happens next week, how many people. She said, we'll try and get more people to come from her house. So this Sunday they could have 20 of them, you never know. And it will keep going that day if they continue to have good experience with devotees that they interact with. I mean, they sat through the class, they did a whole round of japa with this devotee screaming Hare Krishna in the microphone. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna! And they did the whole japa, and I mean, really, they had a good Gita class, and then they had they heard a lot. And then they survived all that. And they had a good experience, and then they had a kirtan, they had a nice feast. They had a lot of prasad. They had a lot of prasad. Hello. Yes, I'm sorry.
We have first seen Srimad Bhagavatam saying that then to we need to endure our simple actions, but in the Bhagavad Gita says, whoever surrenders unto me, I will take them from all sincere actions. So, in one way it says we have to do these simple actions, but in this verse it says we are protected from simple actions. So how to reconcile these two verses?
How to reconcile?
reconcile these two verses? Because there seems like they're
contradictory.
Yeah. Okay, so the question is, in Bhagavatam there's a verse, Tattena Kampam verse, Susamushanamana, that says that we should, the devotee should continue to offer obeisances and respect to Krishna all the while suffering reactions of their sinful activities. And in Gita 1866 says, that we should abandon our varieties of religion and just take shelter of Krishna because he will protect us from all sin, sinful activities. So how to...
Sinful reactions.
So how to reconcile the two statements. In the top 10 of Kampam verse in Bhagavatam, which is spoken by Lord Brahmana in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavatam, the purpose is that the devotee, and there are many commentaries on this, and the purpose is here that the purport is that in the material world, everybody is suffering some form of mature reaction to our karmas, previous karmas. That's why we're here in the material world, and we have to. But the devotee's understanding is that that reaction, when is the reaction for a devotee is different to the reaction for a non-devotee. Reaction for somebody who's engaged in the pure bhakti on devotional service is, it's a token reaction. And many of the acharyas refer to this, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada himself, that Krishna reduces the suffering of the devotee. It may seem like it's very heavy at the time, but conditionally we should have experienced 10 times more. And that's how the devotee sees that. It not only sees that as a reduction in karmic reaction, but sees that as mercy, sees that as a blessing from Krishna, that I'm going through this experience, I'm suffering this hardship, so that I can become once again reinstated with and recognize the eternal, the temporary nature of this material world. And so the suffering that I'm experiencing is actually a great blessing because it takes me closer to Krishna. And the fact that when we take shelter of Krishna, he removes our sinful reactions. It means that the sinful reactions that would be coming to us, they're not going to continue to impede our bhakti. Those sinful reactions are not going to give more inclination towards sinful activity. That's destroyed. That's dissolved by surrender to Krishna. That's the Chaitanya Vaidya Mahashaya. When we take shelter of Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then that the propensity to commit further sin, which continues to entangle us in the material world, is destroyed or dissolved in that process of taking shelter. So we still have reaction, but we don't have further reaction. And reactions are minimized. So, you have something else to say?
Yeah, I'm happy with the answer. Probably, and what you said is actually maybe not exactly our sinful reactions. Maybe that's only what we need to go to straighten our anattas and many things we need to clear so we get controlled reaction, which is not real simple reaction. That's what I understood from what you were saying. Really, I'm happy with the answer.
In this verse, Tattena Kampam, and the purport of Prabhupada mentions that verse exactly this point.
Saradharam
Traitya, and then he explains everything. Says, although the gopi has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation. situation to eradicate this remaining enjoy spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. And then here he says, just as one cannot approach the sun without becoming fire, one cannot approach the supreme pure Lord Krishna without undergoing a rigid purification treatment, which may appear like suffering, but it is in fact a curative treatment administered by the personal hand of the Lord.
That's
good.
Thank you. Conclude it.
Yeah, thank you. That's the purport of it's the first part of the from the disciples of Srila Prabhupada in 10th canto. Right. And the reactions that we get are supposed to be lessons for us, teachers, restoration. I think we'll finish here. It's getting quite bad. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Mataram Srila Bhagavatam ki jai.